It's called The Black Man Is God. It's called The Black Man Is God. Next album. This is for the children. You know what I'm saying? I got this idea from myself, of course, but this is for the children. I got.
Make this prediction. This will be the biggest upset in all fighting history. The easiest fight of my life.
You think your cousin can whoop me? You really do? Anybody on your watch? Anybody in my family?
He's young. He's handsome. They know it. He's a poet, a prophet.
Goal ain't have a net. Who would have dreams and karaoke to cassette? I met OB as an OG in the taxi. Nah, I was legends, rest in peace, Pop's a legend, Mike Corey and Sean Jordan was the essence of the young chorus where we grew from. Seemed like a second, now they less important to the new sun. I guess today weighs more than yesterday. It's morbid to suggest that they will come for them too. When it's a brother younger than you, who humble and who? Used to coach him, now he coached him, blew up, who knew? He caught you on a rough night, you were stumbling through. Now he telling you to get yours, get yours.
All of you reporters made it hard on them.
Like, I know I wasn't going to leave you hanging in the playoffs, man. I know it's been a minute since your boy been on the podcast, but I'm not leaving y'all hanging during the NBA playoffs. I'm not going to do it, okay? That would make me a bad podcaster. That would make me a bad manager of a website. That would make me inferior. And the takes that are on this podcast and that are on this website are not inferior. You know, they're superior. They're superlative. They're amazing. They're fantastic. And I can say the same about our guests as well. So that's why we had to come back with y'all. Another playoff edition of the Hip Hop Sports Report podcast on HipHopSportsReport.com. This is your boy Jay Hicks coming at you guys. And again, it's been a little bit. We haven't touched on anything in terms of the podcast since the draft. I'm not going to front y'all. As a Clevelander, I'm devastated the Browns took Baker Mayfield. And if you have any, if you're curious at all as to why that is, go back and listen to our podcast from last month. And I go deep into why I thought that Mayfield was a flawed prospect, too flawed to be worthy of the number one pick anyway. But neither here nor there, water under the bridge. We're here to talk hoops with my man, friend of the podcast now. I think this is his third appearance, if I'm not mistaken, on the podcast. Former beat writer for Sheridan Hoops, and former Laker beat writer was Sheridan Hoops, was with Basketball Insiders, USA Today. I'm missing one. What am I missing?
Lakers Nation. Currently with Silver Screen and Roll.
Silver Screen and Roll. There we go. Thank you very much, sir. It's Mr. Jabari Davis. Welcome back to the podcast, sir. How you feeling?
I'm feeling great. I appreciate you having me again. And you're right, it is the third time.
Yeah, man. Third time's a charm, man. And the first two were great. So that says it's going to be the best yet, man. Thank you for coming back. I've always loved our conversations. And, you know, it's cool. Like, amazing things can happen when you're not an ass on social media. You know, you can actually meet really cool people, and I've been fortunate enough to do that when I met Jabari on social media a few years ago, and here we are, man. We're still doing podcasts together to this day, still talking NBA hoops, man. So I appreciate you coming back. I want to talk some playoffs with you, and a little bit, not just about the playoffs, but also some stuff about basketball culture these days in 2018. But I wanted to start off by first plugging the website again, HipHopSportsReport.com. Go ahead and check us out there. Of course, we did something not that long ago on Childish Gambino's new video. He's everywhere right now, that guy. And in addition to that, we got some more podcasts coming. I got a special guest to talk some hip-hop with us coming in the very near future. So he already told me that he was down for the cause, and so we'll have him on shortly. But HipHopSportsReport.com is a site, Twitter.com and Facebook.com/HHSReport. You can find us there. And, of course, we're on iTunes and Stitcher Radio and SoundCloud and a bunch of other places. So get the housekeeping out of the way. But I also want to give my man Jabari the opportunity to plug himself at the top of the show. So, Jabari, let them know where they can find you.
Yeah, honestly, the best place to find me is probably on Twitter, Jabari Davis NBA. When I'm not being lazy, and sometimes when I participate in panel articles as well as, you know, individual features, you can find me on Silver Screen and Roll. Shout out to those guys over there, and I appreciate them for giving me the platform. But really, Twitter is probably the safest place.
Nice. All right, man. let's go ahead and dive into it, man. So we're already into the conference finals as of this taping. The Warriors and the Rockets are about to tip off here in about an hour or something like that, hour and a half or so. Warriors have a 2-1 lead on Houston. The Cavaliers tied up the series with the Celtics last night at 2 with another comfortable win in Cleveland. But before we got into the conference finals, I wanted to just kind of get your thoughts on what you thought about the first two rounds of the playoffs. Any major takeaways, Jabari? Anything that you noticed? Because there was definitely some strong opinions that I had about some of the teams that are no longer with us, that have been laid to rest in the first two rounds of the playoffs. So I wanted to get your take on that first before diving into that.
All right. My main takeaways are, no matter how bored we get of the narrative, no matter how tired we get of saying it, LeBron James is still the best player in the league. I will stop drinking the Toronto Raptors Kool-Aid because I tried to convince myself that they had a chance.
Oh, you did.
And that was very quickly extinguished. Anthony Davis is an absolute superstar because for whatever reason, and I can't for the life of me explain why, there were people that, you know, kind of heading into the postseason, you know, questioning that and, you know, mentioning the fact that he had, you know, hadn't won a postseason game or anything of that nature. No, that's a matter of circumstance. And I'll say right now, you better get him now, because if he takes another step, which is certainly possible at 24, 25 years old, it's going to get ugly.
Yeah, I can't agree. Couldn't agree with you more about Anthony Davis, man. What I wrote at the top of the playoffs was basically like, this is the kind of series against Portland where he ought to be able to exert himself as just being the most dominant player on the floor. And in spite of the fact that they were the sixth seed coming in as the lower seed, they should be able to win that series. And I picked them to win in the first round, and I picked them in six, and I think they won did they sweep Portland?
Yeah, they swept them, unless I'm mistaken.
Yeah, I think they did, too.
I know it really quick.
It was a beatdown, whatever it was. I mean, they beat them like they stole something. It was an impressive run for Davis. Obviously, the Pelicans just didn't have enough firepower for Golden State, but it was impressive, and it was impressive to see Jrue Holiday do what he did. Just basically on both ends of the floor, you know, having success against the Portland guards. So that was very impressive. Do you resign DeMarcus Cousins if you're New Orleans? What do you do with him?
I might be willing to give him max money, but not max years. Maybe a 1+1 or something of that nature. But folks will say this is heartless, especially, you know, given the fact that, yeah, it appears as though, you know, he and Ant are friends. But hey, look, this is a business. And at the end of the day, you know, while he's still relatively young, he's a big guy coming off an Achilles tear. So I think, you know, offering him, you know, good money for 1 to 2 years kind of protects both parties. So yeah, I guess the answer is yes, but not at, you know, 5 years and full max. That's just not smart for business.
So then what happens when some other desperate team comes knocking and says, hey, Boogie, we're going to give you the max years and the max money because we're that desperate and we got money to burn? Then you just let them go and just say bye-bye, let them walk out the door?
I don't know if you play poker, but, you know, if you're in a casino and you're playing poker and then the dealer is just about to leave their shift and they do their little wipe of their hands and say goodbye, thank you for your service. I appreciate it. Best of luck to you in Memphis or wherever the heck that team is.
you just get up and cash out and walk out. That's just what you do.
Walk right out.
You know what's funny, man, is that not enough teams do that. And I think that part of that is just they're afraid of the backlash from fans, especially if they have money if they have cap space or if they've been getting rid of expensive ball players who typically are productive ball players, and they have this cap space and then they don't utilize it. You frequently see, you don't even see that. I mean, teams are afraid to do that. They will dole out a bad contract before sitting on cap space. That's what we've learned.
To your point, I get that. You know, I understand succumbing to those pressures, but I also will say that'll also get you fired. You sign a bunch of guys. You know, look, I like Neil O'Shea a lot. He's actually a Southern California guy. He's up there, but he's up there, obviously up there in Portland now. But
yeah, formerly with the Clippers.
Yeah, formerly with the Clippers. He made the mistake of offering up a bunch of big contracts simply to use up his cap space. And quite frankly, it's the reason why Mitch Kupchak and Jim Buss are no longer at the top of the Lakers organization. That summer that they went ahead and gave Mozgov and gang all of that money, that was the beginning of the end for them. It's as simple as this. You can, while you might not want to hear the fans complain or question, or, you'll be loud about, whatever your strategy might be. You also don't want to hear them saying, well, that was just plain dumb. And now we're locked into all these bad contracts.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And teams, they'll do that. I remember Joe D did it in Detroit a few years ago. He was, I forget who was a free agent that year. He gave really big contracts to a couple of guys that really didn't deserve them. And that was all she wrote, even with the championship and two finals appearances. That was it, and they had to let Joe D go. So, I mean, it happens, man. Like you said, there are pressures, because you're feeling the pressure one way or the other if you're an executive. You feel like you're going to get fired either way, Uh-huh. You can't sit on cap space forever and not improve the team, and you can't dole out bad contracts either. Either way, you'll end up on the unemployment line. So it is what it is, but I don't think enough teams are just, and you don't want to lose an asset for nothing. That's the other thing. But
this
I think
is true.
With Cousins coming off an ACL tear, and we know that Achilles tears, and we know that Achilles tears they're not like ACLs. They have a much lower rate of the player returning to their previous form, especially at his size. I don't think you can roll those dice, man. So I really like the option that you suggested for New Orleans. And I agree with you again about the Raptors. I mean, I don't even want to spend too much time on them. I kind of feel for Dwayne Casey a little bit. I feel like he was the fall guy unfairly. And I feel like the move is they got to split up Lowry and DeRozan, because those guys just together can't get it done in the playoffs, whether LeBron James is involved or not, because we've seen them go to seven games against inferior competition, and sometimes they win, sometimes they lose. They got smoked by the Wizards a couple years ago when people thought they were a real team. I mean, that nucleus just isn't going to cut it. And so I would, especially considering that DeRozan is younger than Lowry, he makes a lot of money, but he's still got some years left on his contract, but he can't shoot really. And he's gotten better, but he's still not where he needs to be. I would strongly consider moving off DeMar DeRozan. And if you can get something like, say, a Kawhi Leonard back, that would be dice I would be probably willing to roll if I was Masai Ujiri up in Toronto. So,
well, yeah, I was going to say, if you can get Kawhi Leonard, you just say yes, because Kawhi is a vastly superior player. And I'm a DeMar DeRozan fan. And I think I actually like his game more than others. For the record, I'm also a Boogie guy. So, folks out there that are Boogie fans, don't think that I'm just like, oh, we'll just disregard him. But no. But when it comes to Toronto, yes, Dwayne Casey, kind of got the short end of the stick. But at the same time, when you're a head coach in any professional sport, but especially in the NBA, the job is dangerous when you take it. And you also know if it's you or the players, it's more often than not going to be you.
We see that every single year. We see that every year. I want to talk a little bit about everybody's darling franchise, the Philadelphia 76ers. So everybody was on the Sixers coming into the playoffs, except for me. I was the only one that was sitting back, raising my hand in the back of the room, there's still a bunch of kids, y'all. Their role players aren't that great. I mean, they won 12 games 2 years ago. What am I missing here? You know what I mean? They're two best in an era where everybody is concerned with 3-point shooting and pace and space. Their two best players are a post player, classic back to the basket big man who can make a jump shot, but that's still not his game. He's a low post player, and a point guard who can't shoot. To the point that Ben Simmons did not make a single 3-pointer all year. Not a single 3-point basket was made by Ben Simmons this year. He's never made one in his career, folks, still. And so between that and between Simmons and Embiid, and everybody's talking about spacing and 3-point shooting and all this other stuff, I'm like, why is it that this team is going to go to the finals all of a sudden? And they've never been there before. They've never even been to the playoffs before. It just didn't make sense to me. And not to mention the fact that they got hot at the end of the year, feasting off teams that were garbage, basically, or the teams that were tanking for the most part. I mean, not to say that they didn't have some quality wins mixed in, but by and large, they were beating up on teams that had no interest in being competitive. And so I just didn't understand the Sixers' love. I thought it was getting way out of hand. Like, yes, I would be excited for their future if I was a Sixers fan. However, that doesn't mean that they're going to be in the finals this year. And so while I feel like I was wrong about the Boston Celtics because I didn't expect them to go on the run that they've gone on, in spite of the great respect that I have for Brad Stevens and the guys on those team on that team, I was definitely right about the Sixers not being ready for prime time just yet. Where do you fall on the 76ers thing? Are you very bullish on Simmons and Embiid and that whole crew? And, you know, we're going to talk a little bit about LeBron James later, but I'm not too keen on the idea of LeBron going to Philly for the Sixers' sake, believe it or not. But where do you shake out on Philly and how their season wrapped up?
Well, I'll say this. I wasn't, you know, I wasn't necessarily bullish on them in the sense of I didn't expect them to go to the conference finals, but I did. I could have seen a situation where it was possible. And quite frankly, if they were on the opposite side of the bracket and they had played Toronto, they might have had it. They might have had that opportunity. They might have actually done that. Now, you're 100% right in terms of kind of the flaws with that roster. I'm not, you know, not taking anything away from, you know, either, you know, neither Simmons or nor Embiid, but they don't have enough quality wings that can score, that can shoot. You know, Redick had a good year. You know, Covington had his moments. TJ, McConnell, he had some moments as well. But they, you know, that roster still needs some help. And quite frankly, it's way ahead of schedule. Because it wouldn't have been realistic to expect them to be in the finals this year. I think some of us got ahead of ourselves, especially, as you mentioned, with that run down the stretch and, you know, with how they looked in the first round. But, no, quite frankly, I think, you know, if I'm a Philly fan, I'm 100% fine with how things worked out. You never like going out that way. But at the end of the day, if you're being honest with yourself, you could not have expected a better outcome. You could not have really ultimately expected a better outcome.
And I agree with that. I think they had a tremendous season. I think that, although I do think, personally, this is just me. I mean, we can argue about this or whatever, but I think Donovan Mitchell should be Rookie of the Year and not off of a technicality. I think that he had a better season than Ben Simmons personally. But Ben Simmons is great. Well, go ahead. Go ahead and respond to that.
Well, I'll say this. I don't think it's absolutely asinine. It's not crazy to say that Donovan Mitchell was Rookie of the Year because you're right. He had a phenomenal year. He was incredible. He led a team that lost their, you know, main guy, you know, just last summer as a rookie in scoring. And maybe Rubio led him in assists. But in terms of overall impact, he was the leader of that team. So I'm not saying it's crazy. I'm just saying – and I don't care about the, like, you know, old Ben Simmons was there, whatever. He's a rookie, and it is what it is, and people can, you know, cry about semantics all they want. But for my money, Simmons did was slightly more impressive because even though, yes, he was, you know, he was around the team, this was his first year on the court. His overall impact was, you know, was absolutely phenomenal, just like, you know, Mitchell. But he also had to deal with Embiid going in and out of the lineup, and had, you know, and really stepped up down the stretch of the season during that stretch, you know, regardless of what teams they were playing. So, it, you know, for me, it's not like it's like 75-25. For me, it's like it really is like a 60-40 or maybe even a 55-45 situation. Whereas, you know, there's nothing wrong with somebody being of the opinion that Donovan Mitchell, you know, was the guy.
So a lot of the talk that you hear nationally, and we're also going to talk about the national media because they really get on my nerves these days. But the national sports media is just the worst. But they talk as if it's a foregone conclusion that Simmons not only will be Rookie of the Year, but that he should be Rookie of the Year. And that's where I kind of get a little defensive. I mean, everything that you said about Simmons is true. I think that it didn't hurt Ben Simmons, though, that he had a guy on his roster who started in the All-Star game. You know what I mean? And so that should tell you the kind of talent that Joel Embiid possesses. He has that level of teammate. Now, Mitchell has an All-Star teammate as well. But he wasn't starting, and he's not an offensive force. He's a defensive force, and Embiid's a force on both ends. So when I look at what Mitchell was able to accomplish, as you said, in a situation where they lost Gordon Hayward last summer, he walks in, you know, didn't have a lot of expectations for him being the guy, and all of a sudden he becomes the guy. He averages, I think, 20 or 21 a game as a rookie and leads Utah to the 5 seed, I believe, in the West rather than playing in the East, which is what Philly was doing. He's in the West leading them to the 5 seed as their best player and their go-to guy in crunch time. I thought that was far more impressive. And they were only like a game out of being in the 3rd seed out West. I mean, that was, it's insane what they were able to accomplish this year in Utah. So they had a great year as well. So I would give it to him. But my point just being that I agree, they're ahead of schedule. Philly's ahead of schedule, so their fans should be super pumped about what they've accomplished to this point. I just, you know, I just didn't like the way that people just were shoehorning them into the finals already, ignoring the fact that they're a bunch of babies, man. I mean, you know what I mean? They got Similac on their breath and all that. Like, they're just, they're kids. They're kids, man. So I don't,
you know,
I don't,
what happens?
What's the,
you know what really happens?
What's that?
You have a lot of folks out there, and I'm talking about writers, bloggers, pundits, whatever, that they were all on, you know, the process. So at the very opportunity that they can, you know, say, kind of stick their chest out and say, see, if we were right, of course, it's human nature to want to, to kind of want to tap dance a little bit and be happy about it.
And that's
it
true.
Doesn't make it right.
Well, that's true, saying,
but that's the reason, in my honest opinion.
Well, and the process to me is still a little bit overrated.
well, you know what? To that point, it's very easy to point to Joel Embiid and, you know, Ben Simmons and say, hey, look, see, it worked. But we also have to keep in mind, look, and I'll get to the same point on the Celtics, you know, later on, I'm sure. But we also have to keep in mind, you know, they also drafted Okafor. They also drafted Nerlens Noel. They also, you know.
Exactly.
It wasn't 100% perfect, but they looked, you know, not to discredit them at all, because they definitely got it right with those two.
They did. No, they hit home runs with those two picks. No questions asked. But Fultz is still a question mark. And,
yes.
And you know, they whiffed on Nerlens Noel, and they whiffed on Jahlil Okafor. And part of this quote-unquote process is them taking advantage of the fact that these guys aren't healthy. Like, Embiid missed the better part of 2 full seasons, I believe. Simmons missed an entire season. Fultz basically missed an entire season. And so when you factor that into this quote-unquote process, it's like, oh, they followed the Oklahoma City model. That was the quote from 10 years ago, was the Oklahoma City model. It's like, there is no Oklahoma City model. Oklahoma City stunk for 3 years, and they hit on 3 picks at the top of the draft. That's not a model. That you can call it good scouting. You can call it luck. You can call it a lot of things, but it's not a model for success. The Sacramento Kings have been doing the Oklahoma City model for years, and look where it's gotten them. You know what I mean? They just haven't hit on the picks. You have to hit on the players, Jabari. So
absolutely.
So it's to your point about Noel and some of these other guys. Like, they didn't pan out. They picked 3 big men at the top of the draft in a row. That didn't work. And this is why I don't understand why there's the Sam Hinkie truthers. I don't buy into that at all, man, because Sam Hinkie, what he did was he perfected the teardown. He got rid of all the overpriced veterans. He brought in a bunch of scrubs that couldn't play deliberately. They tanked to the bottom, and they picked guys that had injury history. Like, Nerlens Noel had injury history coming into the draft. And then Joel Embiid had injury history coming into the draft. So they're picking these guys that are fragile. And then guess what? They get hurt. Shocker, right? Mm-hmm. And then they capitalize off of that by using that as a reason or an excuse to stink more, and then they get another high draft pick. So, you know, but eventually you have to turn the corner. And even though Brian Colangelo's record in Philly is not flawless either, he was the one that went out and got Ersan Ilyasova off the scrap heap. He was the one that went out and gave a little bit of dough to J.J. Redick. He was the one that went out and got Marco Bellinelli off the scrap heap. And those were the guys that actually turned it around for Philly. Embiid and Simmons are great, and I'm not trying to, like, diss them or nothing like that, but it was those role guys and their perimeter shooting, which is what elevated Philly to the next level. And now they might not even be able to bring all those guys back. Although, if I were them, and again, we'll talk about LeBron, of course, later, but if I were them, I would be thinking more along the lines of Paul George, Kawhi Leonard, than LeBron James. But we'll leave that conversation there. We spend a lot of time on teams that aren't in the playoffs anymore. So let's talk about teams that are in the playoffs, man. And let me just say this, though, about the playoffs in general. They've been, like, mad boring, right?
Well, I'm biased. I'll watch a blowout. I'll watch a close game. I'll watch whatever, just because I'm a junkie when it comes to the NBA. But they've been lopsided. I've definitely, especially honestly, the conference finals have been lopsided. Back and forth.
Totally lopsided.
One team will blow it, blow them out one game, and the next team will come back the next game and do the same. But one thing I will say is, I'm hoping at least the Eastern Conference series goes more than five or six games. I know that that might not be to your liking, but I want a seven game series at least one of these periods. So, part of me thinks, to be honest, and I'm sure we're going to get there, but the winner of the next game between Boston and Cleveland wins that series. I know, and again, I know that might not be what you want to hear, but I would like to see a seven gamer.
What were your pre-conference finals predictions?
I thought, okay, so prior to last round, I didn't have the Cavs going. Now I got I had the Cavs going.
Okay.
And I think you know my opinion. If the Warriors are right, they're going to the finals.
Gotcha. Well, they might not be right, because Andre Iguodala is out tonight. So the game will have been played by the time the people hear this podcast, but Iggy's not playing tonight, and so that helps the Rockets a little bit. But I had Cleveland in six and Houston in seven coming into the conference finals. And the reason for each of those being, I respect the Celtics a lot. There was never a point where I wavered on the Cavs. Even when they were down 0-1 to the Pacers, even when they were down 2-1 to the Pacers, I never wavered that they were going to win that series. I never wavered that they were going to win the Eastern Conference. And it's not because the Cavs are so great. It's just because I don't believe that anybody in the East has the makeup to knock off a LeBron James-led team at this point. I just don't think they have it. And so, I'm going to ride with the Cavs in the East for that reason. Out West, it kind of came down to, well, Golden State's the best team, and I can cop to that. But do I really believe that the same two teams are going to go to the finals four straight years? I just really had a hard time wrapping my head around it. Now, in fairness, I had a hard time wrapping my head around the same two teams going three consecutive years, because I don't believe that had ever happened before in league history. And if it did, it was back in the 60s or 50s or something like that. But it happened last year. And so for it to be four straight years, the same two teams, I just found it hard to believe. And I thought the competition in the West was stiffer than the competition in the East for the champion. And so therefore, when I looked at the Rockets, I said way back during the beginning of the season, I was like, to me, this Rockets team was the best non-Cavs or Warriors team in the NBA over the last 4 years. So basically, since LeBron has returned to Cleveland, and if you take all the teams in the league, each of those 4 years, with the exception of the Cavs teams and the Warriors teams over that time, I thought this year's Rockets team was the best team. And so I thought that they had a chance to get there. I thought that the Warriors, I mean, obviously they've been not all the way focused all season long. It's been a little bit of a taxing year for them from a mental focus standpoint. And, you know, and I admit, man, I don't think that they're a better team than Golden State necessarily. But it's really that doesn't mean that the better team doesn't always win. Usually they do. They don't always win. And so it kind of felt to me like, okay, something's got to give. The same two teams probably aren't going to get there four straight years. And I believe in, and I'm a big Chris Paul believer. We've discussed that before on the podcast as well. So that kind of was what led me. And the home court advantage, too. The fact that they would have Game 7 in Houston. I felt like all those factors kind of worked in Houston's favor. Now, where it stands currently, I said this after the Cavs dropped the first two in the East. I said, the Cavs are going to have to win four straight against Boston, because they're not going to win a Game 7 up there, I don't believe. Even with LeBron James, as great as he is, I don't see the Cleveland Cavaliers winning a Game 7 in Boston. So the job is half complete, right? And out West, it's kind of a situation where the Rockets have to win tonight. And so I basically thought that they were going to win the series in seven games. So there was no way they could go down 0-2 at home and win the series. So they had to win game two, and they did. And they can't drop them both and go down 3-1 to Golden State. That can't happen either. So they have to win tonight. And if they win tonight and then they win tomorrow night, then they can win the series. They got to win two straight now against Golden State. This is just kind of how I'm doing the math in my head. What do you think of how these series have unfolded to this point? Has anything shocked you, or has this been pretty much par for the course?
To be honest, it's been par for the course because, quite frankly, if the Rockets lose tonight, they're getting gentlemen swept. And you know what, Rockets fans, be mad. And if I'm wrong, feel free to hit me up on the timeline as you normally do. We're in 100% agreement with the Eastern Conference series. And that's why I said the winner of that next game, I believe, wins that series.
Agreed. Yeah. It's the same thing.
We're in complete agreement. I'll be honest with you. While I've been impressed by the Rockets, I was encouraged by what they did, throughout the regular season, it always for me was, okay, are the Warriors going to be right at the end? Now, I hear what you're saying about Iguodala being out, and obviously time will tell, over the course of the rest of this series, how much that impacts them. But if I line both teams up, even with it being the fourth year in a row, I look at it and I say, the Warriors should win that series.
Yeah, I get it.
I know that's boring.
It's boring, and it's frustrating because of the competitive balance thing, and you can't blame the franchise for going out and getting Kevin Durant. It's not their fault, but it's just like, can we have something else?
Trust me, I get it. I get it 1,000,000%.
So the blowouts though, back and forth in both conferences and in the playoffs in general, the amount of blowouts that we've seen, does that mean nothing to you? What do you attribute that to?
It could be as simple as role players oftentimes play better at home, and when you have relatively evenly matched talent, the peripheral guys are going to make the difference. Because you know what you're gonna get, basically what you're gonna get from Steph. You know what you're gonna get from KD. You know what you're gonna get from Klay. Just like on the flip side, you know what you're gonna get from CP3 and James Harden or Capella or whomever, right? But it really does come down to whose role guys can play the best over the most extended period of time, throughout a series. So. And I'm pretty sure if you look at the box scores, it kind of breaks down that way.
Well, I will say in game three, Chris Paul and James Harden were both terrible in game three. And that's how you end up with a 40-point blowout. Although I will say that of all the 40-point blowouts I've ever seen, Jabari, that one didn't feel as much like a 40-point blowout to me. And I guess it's because I didn't think Golden State played that great either. And that sounds crazy, but
that's the scary thing.
Yeah, I mean, and it is scary. Yes, like they didn't play their best game, and they beat a 65-win team by 40 points. Like, yes, that's petrifying for all of humanity. Like, yes, that is. It's hard to put into words what that really is saying, but I just didn't think that Golden State played that well. The Steph thing happened when Steph came alive in the third quarter. It was over with, right? I mean, there was nothing. You just throw up your hands and let it go at that point. And I think that kind of speaks to my theory of why these blowouts seem to be happening in abundance. I look at it as we have the 3-point era, right? We're in the 3-point era. Everybody's shooting threes, jacking threes. I mean, Houston's whole philosophy, whether it's ISO ball or not, which the ISO thing is another thing that it's another national media narrative that I don't quite buy into to the extent that they hype it up. But regardless, Houston is all about shooting threes, right? They shoot 40 a game. That's kind of their philosophy. And Golden State doesn't shoot as many as they used to, but they still shoot a ton of them. And when you have teams or like the Cavs, for instance, shoot a bunch of threes. The Celtics shoot a lot of threes, too. So when you have teams that are shooting this many three-pointers, and then we're also in the era of people putting significant value on rest. You know what I mean? Like resting guys for the next game, live to fight another day. If you get down 15 points in the second half and maybe that turns to 17 – teams just kind of shut it off, man. And I think it's because they're valuing their rest. They're like, we're just going to rest our guys. We're not going to exert extra energy to try to get back into this game. And the three-pointers, either whether they go in or not, dictates the outcome more often than not. And so if a team is shooting six for 30 on threes, they're not going to win that game. And so that's how you find yourself down in a huge hole. Conversely, if you're making a ton of threes, you're going to be up by quite a bit. And the other team's like thinking rest for the next game. Like, you know what? I think we probably would have just sent everybody down right now. That's kind of how I see this playing out. Like those, the convergence of those two eras, if you will, that we're in the midst of, I think is responsible for all these blowouts.
Well, yeah, it's certainly possible. And to your point, especially if you're shooting 30 or 40 of them a game, you know, like, it's as simple as this. If you're on, you're probably going to win. if you're off, if you're off, it's as simple as, okay, if you're off and your opponent is on, it's as simple as, well, we can, you know, we can struggle and lose by 25 instead of 40, or we can chalk it up to, okay, we better go ahead out there and get them the next time.
So keeping in the theme of just trashing the national media again, let me just go here. So I'm going to pivot back to the Warriors a little bit because again, they're great. You know they're great. I know they're great. The most hardened Warrior hater knows that they're great. You know what I mean? It's undeniable, right? But the way that they're covered really irks me, Jabari. Like, it just really, really does. Like, every time the Warriors lose a game, it's not an accident. But if you let the media tell it, every time they lose, it's an accident. And I just, like, even if they're the most talented team, that doesn't mean they can't be beaten. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not of the belief that they can't be beaten in a series. I mean, granted, it doesn't, you know, it looks like they're in position to waltz to another championship. But I don't believe that they're of, that's why I wasn't afraid to pick the Rockets. It's like, I think that they can be beaten. They can be had. You know, Steph had two bad games in Houston, right? Now, eventually, because they lost one, Houston has to get one in Oakland. But, I mean, if he continues to struggle up in Houston, what's to say that the Rockets can't win Game 5 and Game 7? They just have to get one, find a way to get one in Oakland. Like, I just don't buy into this belief that they're so magnificent and they're just so much better. You know, they're like the dream team in 92. That's kind of the way the media would lead you to believe that they are. And again, they're great, but when they start shooting threes and everybody's making threes, everybody's like going crazy about how the Warriors have revolutionized basketball. And then coming into this series, all I was hearing was about during the first game when Warriors won game one, they were getting praised repeatedly for taking mid-range jumpers. And it's like, wait a minute. Y'all told us for years that it was all about three-point shooting because the Warriors revolutionized the game. Now they're taking mid-range jumpers and now we're patting them on the back and I don't buy into that. I don't buy into how Steph Curry, every time he has a bad game, it's because he's hurt. And then he has a good game, he's not hurt. You never hear about his injuries after a good game. It was the same thing in the 2016 playoffs. It was the same thing this year. They were questioning his injury in the first half of game three because he didn't play well. And then he comes out like gangbusters in the second half and nobody says shit about his injuries in the second half. I just don't buy into that at all. Even going back to 2016, the myth of Draymond Green suspension being the reason that the Warriors lost the 2016 finals, that garbage myth. It just drives me up the wall how everybody just acts as though every time they lose a game, it's an accident. I mean, maybe I'm crazy. Tell me I'm crazy if I'm crazy, I guess.
Well, no, you're not crazy.
I look at it like this. It's not the Warriors saying this stuff. It isn't like Steph is sitting there going like, oh, man, my knee was really hurting in that first. No, it's all a narrative. Like, so I get the frustration or the annoyance, from bloggers, from, you know, pundits, from whomever, you know, from folks just on Twitter. But, you know, to a certain degree, I don't want to say you're mad for nothing, but I'll say it's displaced anger if it's towards the Warriors. They just go out and kind of do what they do. They know what they got, and they know, of course, anyone can be beaten. There's no team out there that ever went undefeated. The Warriors might be as close to as close to unbeatable in a series as we've seen. But no, just like you mentioned, in 2016, we watched them get beaten. I won't rehash the fact that I do think some of that stuff factored into it, but because ultimately, when we look back 10 years from now, it doesn't matter if Draymond got suspended. It doesn't matter if Steph was slowed. They lost.
Simple as that.
Yeah. Yeah. And, but I, you know, I don't, I just, it's just, like you said, it's just really bothersome to hear it. And the constant slurping of this team. I don't know. I just, and they're not the only ones getting slurped here. The Boston Celtics.
I wonder what you would have felt like. Well, hold on. See, wait a second. How old are you? And no, I'm not being, you know, the old guy in the room, but I just want to know for perspective.
I'm 33.
Okay. Well, I know that you saw Mike, but trust me, that, that 96 Bulls team, if you don't like how this team was covered, I can tell you, you would have hated, absolutely hated the way that the 95 and 96 Bulls teams were covered.
So I remember those teams well, and I watched all those teams well, and I watched Mike win. I'm old enough to remember pretty much all of Mike's championships, but what I was not on at that time was the coverage of the team. Yeah. So that you can help me with that.
Yeah, trust me, everybody, look, writers, they always do this. They want a hero and they want a villain. Simple as that. Right now, the Warriors are kind of playing both, which is why it's doubly frustrating. Because half the country loves them. And, as you mentioned, as you stated, slurps. And the other half just loves to hate them. And I guess you could say hate slurps.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, sounds like sounds similar to what LeBron goes through after every single game. Just the dichotomy, right? Like, just on both ends, you see just...
LeBron suffers from being one of the greatest players to ever play the game. And no matter what, there's always going to be people mad at that. And there's always going to be people that are, that are all about it.
Is sports debate culture, is it, I hate words, what it's become. Is debating sports fun for you still?
No, not at all. And I'm sure you've noticed over the last few years, my Twitter interactions have significantly changed. I'll still get out there and talk here and there, but like when it's the back and forth and back and forth on the same exact subject that we talked about over and over again and heard debated on the radio over and over again and on podcasts over and over again, I kind of duck out. I'll sit on the sideline with some popcorn and enjoy some of the times because I'm always here for the jokes. But when it comes to just the back and forth about the same thing, yeah, no, that's not fun.
It's terrible, man. And so to that point, I am on Facebook, right? And so on Facebook, I've been added to a member, I've been added as a member of multiple sports groups, like closed groups that just talk about sports with each other, right? Mm-hmm. I didn't ask to be in any of these groups. People added me to these groups, I promise you. These groups are terrible, Jabari. Like, the people in there aren't all bad. There's some good people. There's some people that know sports. But the majority of these people are morons. They're morons. And it's just like, at least, maybe they're not morons. Maybe that's not fair. But the way in which they argue about sports is moronic. Let's put it that way. And it's just...
You'll laugh at this, but honestly, what social media did is it took the once a week or once every 2 weeks, depending upon how your funds are, barbershop conversation that you used to hear, and you could deal with it because it was only once every week or so. It's every second of every day now. It's just a barbershop conversation. It's the old dude in the corner, oh, well, she, you know what, boy, you just don't know about this. And the young guy saying, oh, no, you don't know about this. And that's all it is. And everybody else somewhere in the middle. Or latching on to the same narrative that they see or hear.
That's all it is. And barbershop sports talk is the worst.
Yes. But it was entertaining when it was just, once every 7 to 10 days. It was entertaining.
Yeah.
Now it's like, it's tough because it's just too much.
Shout out to Legends Barbershop on Monticello in Cleveland. That's where I used to get my hair cut when I lived back at home. And rest in peace to my man Tone. Used to cut my hair, Anthony Houston, rest in peace to him, but not the Anthony Houston that's affiliated with Hip Hop Sports Sport, different Anthony Houston, Tony, but anyway, I remember somebody in that shop, and I'm not going to tell you, that person will remain nameless, but I remember hearing somebody in that barbershop once say, man, I don't give Tom Brady any credit for them championships, because 2 or 3 of them championships belong to Adam Vinatieri.
Yeah, okay.
Really? Like, really? This is where we're at? We're giving the kicker credit for the chance? The kicker, the guy makes one kick, and now we're discrediting the quarterback? Is that where we're at now?
Look, people will, you know, people will go with whatever narrative fits their, their strong emotion. I won't even call it opinion. Their strong emotion.
Or their agenda.
Justin, can I do this? Yeah, since you shouted out that the hometown barbershop.
Yeah, for sure.
I got a little cousin that cuts hair out there in Cleveland. He works at Kingdom Cuts. His name is Zeke. Hit him up.
Kingdom Cuts. His name is Zeke. What do you know where Kingdom Cuts is by chance?
It's in Maple Heights.
Okay, yeah, Maple Heights. Okay, I've never been out that way, but yeah, shout out to Kingdom Cuts though and Zeke cutting hair out there in Cleveland. No doubt, yeah. Yeah, no, I appreciate that. And shout out to my man, Maul G, another barber. You know, Maul G down there cutting hair near the flats in Cleveland. But, we're black folks. We all know barbers, right? We all know 10 barbers, right? No, my man, Jay Malone in Dallas. you know, we just shout them all out while we out here. The sports debate culture, man, is just it's just reprehensible at this point. And I can't even psych myself up to debate anymore. You know what I mean? I just be thinking, like, what do these people do all day? Like, I'm a grown man with a job and responsibilities and a family. Like, y'all just want to sit up here and go back and forth about an inaccurate meme all day? Like, is that really what we're doing now?
Yes.
Like, like you put it on a meme, it's got to be true, right?
Right. Hey, look, they put it next to Kobe Bryant's face, so clearly he said this. This is his opinion.
Dude, I've seen that, too. I saw one, Somebody said that Chris Paul had said after game 2 of this Rockets Warriors series that Chris Paul said something like, Steph Curry's great, but he's not better than me. And I saw that, and I'm like, I don't think Chris Paul said that. He probably thinks it, but I don't think he said that.
And, no, of course not.
Yeah, right?
Some fan said, oh, yeah, I'm going to attribute this to my favorite player. Or I'm going to attribute this to the guy going against the guy that I hate the most.
Right, right. I can't get on board. Like I saw a guy in one of these groups that I'm a member of on Facebook after one of the Cavs losses, maybe it was, I think, against Indiana, because they didn't lose against Toronto, so it was one of the Indiana losses, maybe game 1 or game 6, one of them. Like they're showing like LeBron on the post, and the guy is like taking either gifs or like still shots and like trying to, like, he's being like a basketball breakdown film guy on Facebook. You know what I mean? It's like, don't be that guy. Don't be the breakdown film guy on Facebook talking about, and LeBron, he does this and this and this. And when he's in the post, he did this and this. And because he never got a post or a mid-range game, that's why he's not the GOAT. Because then, and it's like, can we just accept the fact that LeBron James is one of the greatest players ever? Like, why are you spending this much time trying to discredit LeBron when clearly his entire career, all of his accolades indicate that even if you hate his guts, he's one of the 10 best players of all time. In my opinion, he's in the top 3. But if you don't have him in your top 10, then you're doing basketball wrong. Like, you just don't understand basketball, or you're just being blinded by your own hatred. Like you don't have to. Like, I never liked Kobe Bryant's game. You know what I mean? I was never a Kobe guy. But Kobe, to me, is somewhere between 8 and 12 as far as the greatest player ever. Like, he's in that discussion. And I have no problem putting him there because I have the utmost respect for Kobe Bryant in spite of the fact that I never liked him. You know what I mean? Like, why can't people just be that way?
Honestly, because, like, I'll use Kobe since you just brought him up. The reason is because he hurt their hearts all those years. Honestly, he was breaking their hearts all those years. It's the same thing with LeBron. Oh, he's been to 8 straight finals, or this, that, and the other. Stop being mad and appreciate. If you really love the game of basketball, speaking generally, not you, but you know what I mean. If you really love the game of basketball, just appreciate how great that is. It's not like you don't have to love the guy. Like, I didn't love Karl Malone. In fact, I couldn't stand him. But he's a top 2. He's a top 1 or 2 at the worst power forward of all time.
No, I would actually beg to differ on that. I actually hated Karl Malone also, and I would say that he's probably the most overrated great player of all time, and that he's not a top 2 power forward. So it's funny that you would pick him of all people, because I'm the last guy you want to talk to about Karl Malone. I never liked Karl Malone.
Oh, no, no. We remember, we actually had this talk after the last podcast. I couldn't, like, trust me. Look,
even when you came to the Lakers?
I'm not for sleeping with the enemy. We don't do that. And look, and you saw how it worked out. You saw exactly how it worked out.
Yeah, it crashed and burned at the end.
Yep. But no, no. But you know what I mean. Like you don't have to love the player to acknowledge how great he is. And I'm going to say it's this straight out. If you don't have LeBron James in your top 10 of all time, you don't know basketball and don't talk to me about basketball.
Right. I think that's fair. I think that's completely fair. I don't even think that's asking too much.
No.
You know, yeah. Like, how is he not in the top 10? Like, again, to me, he's in the top 3 today. And when it's all said and done, he's probably going to be 1 or 2. Probably. But, you know, I mean, the finals record is the dumbest metric for greatness that people use today. Like, if you want to say Jordan is better than LeBron because he has 6 rings, I'm cool with that. But don't tell me Jordan is better than LeBron because he's 6-0 in the finals, when LeBron's gone to 8 finals and might make it 9 this year in a few days. Like, don't tell me that, because for all we know, if Jordan was good enough to get his team to more finals, he wouldn't be undefeated.
Listen, I'm gonna tell you just like this, folks, and we it goes to what we talked about earlier. Folks will go with whatever narrative helps them, helps their opinion.
They want to be right.
Jerry West, I love Jerry West. I didn't watch him personally because it was before my time, but I've loved Jerry West even when since I was a small child when he was working within the organization as a general manager. So here's the deal. He was 1-8 or 1-9 in the finals. Nobody talks about that. He's the logo of the league. The logo of the league.
Yeah.
Mr. Clutch is his nickname, and he's 1-8 or 1-9 in the finals. Yeah. Now, that's not to be disparaging against him. It's just to add perspective. Magic Johnson, my favorite player of all time, 5-4 in the finals. And if you really want us to talk this Jordan stuff, I want you to name me the team that Jordan's Bulls beat that is anywhere near as good as this current Golden State Warriors run.
Yeah, there isn't one.
I just made everybody mad now. So
yeah, probably. But and so we're kind of on the subject of LeBron. I think now's a good time to talk a little bit about the Cavs. I've been. How have you felt about the job Ty Lue has done? Because there's no more popular thing to do in Cleveland than trash Ty Lue these days. But where do you shake out on his performance this year? Because I'm conflicted. Like, and when I talk to my family and friends about Ty Lue, I trash him all the time too, because there's a lot of things that he does that leave me scratching my head, like literally scratching my head. But I kind of empathize with the situation that he's been placed in, which isn't really his fault. Where do you shake out on him?
I mean, when you're standing next to the sun, it's going to be hot no matter what. LeBron is the sun. Yeah, it's that simple. Look, there's only so much you can do, one, because I said this going into the season. I said it even after the trades, and I'll say it again. The roster is limited in terms of its actual effectiveness outside of LeBron. It's crafted, on paper. It's crafted, to benefit him, but you got some pumpkins on that roster. So to a certain degree, he's working with what he's got. He's got them within 2 games of the finals. You know what I'm saying? He's got them. Ty Lue has them within 2 games of the finals. So even if he's not perfect, even if there are definite situations where I go like, I don't know about that. The guy knows what he's doing. The guy, the guy has at the very least. He knows how to manage and coach the greatest player in the game currently. That is an absolute skill. It's one that David Blatt didn't have. It's one that, bringing it back to the Lakers, it's what, because Shaq and Kobe played together 4 years before before Phil Jackson came around. It's one that Dale Harris didn't have, Kurt Rambis didn't have. It is an absolute skill to be able to coach the absolute greatest player in the game. So at the very least, he's got that right.
I can't disagree with that part of it. And in defense of Ty Lue and the Cavaliers in general, because if the Cavs, if they lose to Boston, they're going to get crushed. If the Cavs go into the finals and play the Warriors or the Rockets and they lose in anything less than 6, they're going to get crushed. They're probably going to get crushed regardless. If LeBron loses anything short of winning a championship, LeBron's going to get crushed. We know that. So – but here's the perspective that I think people need to have with regards to the Cavaliers this year. And I kind of was spitballing off the top of my head and came up with a list of things that have impacted their season. And you know I like to make lists on the podcast, y'all. So here we go. And I knew that this season was not going to end well when they didn't bring back my man Olivier Cedra, the PA announcer for the Cavaliers. He's now with the Brooklyn Nets. Olivier's my guy. Shout out to Olivier. I don't know why they didn't bring him back. I'm not privy to that information right now, but I wish he was still in Cleveland. And the new guy sounds pretty good, but Olivier's my guy. I used to hoop with him and all that other stuff. Shout out to Olivier. But I knew that that was going to be that told me that this season was going to go south, man. Keep that in perspective. South, y'all. They're two games away from the finals. But they didn't bring back David Griffin, which I still think was a mistake. And I think it's the one major mistake that you can hang directly on Dan Gilbert. But I think Dan Gilbert gets a raw deal a lot of times. And they hired a rookie GM. So this rookie general manager is in place. Richard Jefferson got cut right before the season to make room for Dwayne Wade. J.R. Smith started the season complaining about being benched, right? And Wade was being in the starting lineup. They eventually moved Wade to the bench and put J.R. back in. Tristan got hurt early in the season. Isaiah Thomas was never healthy. And so as long as Isaiah Thomas was out, the Cavs are basically playing with one hand tied behind their back because they essentially got nothing in return from the Kyrie trade. Iman Shumpert got hurt early in the season. And he was also filming a reality show the whole time. So that kind of tells you where his head might have been. You had Isaiah Thomas, again, still recovering from the passing of his sister tragically in last year's playoffs. You don't just because the season ended doesn't mean that IT's over that. You know what I'm saying? He's still dealing with that. And on top of that, the day of the Kyrie trade, Jay Crowder was in that trade. His mother died that same day. Later in the season, Kyle Korver lost his little brother. I think his brother was like 27 years old. He died unexpectedly. Just random things that are happening to this team that you just don't usually see. Isaiah Thomas returns. He's calling out coaches. He's calling out teammates. But he doesn't even fit in with LeBron or Love. Their numbers, particularly Kevin Love's numbers, plummet when Isaiah was on the court. Derrick Rose goes AWOL in the middle of the season. Kevin Love was dealing with mental health issues. He left the Oklahoma City game and just went home in the middle of the game. And then penned this article on the Players Tribune about mental health and all that stuff. Wade and LeBron's relationship created a division within the team. Jay Crowder was trash all season. And then they have these trades. So they turn over half the roster. And we can all agree that it takes a long time for a roster to get to know one another, to get to learn how to play with one another. We know it's not easy learning to play with LeBron James, right? They turn over half the roster. They trade away Wade for nothing. After the trade, the team plays pretty well, but then Love had just broken his hand, so he's out of the lineup. So now they got to work Kevin Love back in. JR was terrible all season. He's throwing soup at Damon Jones. Teron Lue's health goes south, and so he has to sit out and missed about 3 weeks of time. Tristan Thompson was trash all season. He gets his girlfriend pregnant, right? Khloe Kardashian. He's on a reality show at the IX Center in freaking on the west side of Cleveland, right? On the Kardashian show, he ends up cheating on her, or I think it was a setup, but whatever it was, he gets caught up in that nonsense. Now TMZ's following the team around right before the playoffs. The baby just is born just now. Rodney Hood gets benched in the playoffs, and then he's complaining. He didn't want to go back in the game. They fell down 0-2 to Boston, but they came back and they won two games. They still had the sixth best record in the league and the fourth best record in the conference. This team is still two games away from the finals, y'all. And so, in spite of all of that, if the Cavs don't win, they're not supposed to, honestly. And to your point, the roster is just not there either. Like, it's just not. So, I mean, you're not – it's good to hear that you have some sense about you to the point that you're not going to be crushing LeBron if, for whatever reason, he doesn't lose or doesn't win a championship. But do you think that it would be more prudent for his legacy to lose in the conference finals than actually lose in the finals?
No, absolutely not. Little blog boys might say some stuff like that, but I'll tell you right now, you always want to get to the finals. You always want to give yourself that chance. And if you fall short against one of the greatest compilations of players that the league has seen over the last 30 to 40 years, there's no shame in that. They might folks on Twitter might sit there and say all types of this, that, and the other. There's absolutely no shame in enduring all that you just laid out and simply coming up short. I will say this. Every NBA team has it'll sound crazy. Every NBA team has all types of stuff like that happen throughout the course of the year. But the fact that they were able to overcome it, it's a testament to one, how great LeBron James is, how strong that unity, you know, that bond amongst the team must actually be. And honestly, again, even though Ty Lue, it got to be so stressful, he had to, you know, he had to leave his post simply because of actually, you know, being in physical danger. Even though that happened, you got to give a man some credit, because this has been an incredibly difficult season. This has been an almost impossible season.
It's been an impossible. That's a great word. It's been an impossible season. What the Cavs have endured. And that's why I didn't have a problem picking them coming out of the East still, because I know they're mentally tougher than all these other teams that they're going up against.
Yeah.
They ought to be able to get a game in Boston with that mental toughness, but they haven't been able to show it yet. Like, they haven't shown that they have that toughness just yet, but
they get their next one.
Yeah, but I mean, they're certainly more mentally tough than Toronto. They're more mentally tough than Philly. You know, a bunch of children. children and J.J. Redick running around. No, I think I like the Cavs' chances in that scenario. So do you think they're going to beat Boston, or do you like Boston to come out the East right now?
Oh, no. Well, like I said, I think the winner of that next game wins the series.
Okay, so it just all comes down to game five then for you.
Yes. Okay. And I think – I look at LeBron and I go, you know what? He's given you zero reason to doubt him. I think you see one of those just incredible games out of him. I don't know what the counting numbers are going to be, but I'm talking about on both sides. You know, much like he did, what was that, game two? Was that game three where it was just literally everything on both sides of the court? Was that game three, or was that game
Well, he was definitely defending well in game three.
I think you see that type of effort, and you get the, you know, 30-plus points, and you get, you know, all-around game. I think, honestly – I think he shoots whatever shot he's got. I think he gives it to you in game five.
So, and the only thing with that, though, is that the Cavs already burned a classic LeBron performance in game two, and Kevin Love had like 22 and 15 in that game, and they still didn't win. So that's, you know, it's nothing's going to be given. That's what they said. For Northeast Ohio, nothing is given. Everything's earned. That's what LeBron said. They're going to have to earn it in game five. Really quickly, then, do you see LeBron leaving Cleveland this year, and is that the right move for him?
Well, I'm not dodging it. The right move for him is honestly whatever the heck he wants to do. I know, you know, fans don't want to hear that, but look, he's giving you a lot. You know what I'm saying? He's giving you a majority of his career. Yes, he had that stint in Miami, but ultimately he brought it back home, and he's been fighting for you. You know, he fought for you for what, 7-8 years to begin with, and he's been fighting for you for, you know, on the back half of his prime. If he ultimately wants to take off, I wouldn't begrudge him. I know that there will be some that burn his jersey. I know there will be some hurt. If I were a Cavs fan, I would be hurt as well. But I would also understand, hey, look, man, the guy gave us everything he possibly could, and we enjoyed it. We enjoyed the hell out of it. So all of that said, man, I feel like you'll be disappointed, but yeah, I do think he does leave.
So my only thing with that is, and I agree with most of what you just said, I don't know where he would go that is going to help him historically. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know where you go. Like, if you go to another great team, then you're just jumping on a great team, you know, which is worse than what he did in Miami. Like, at least they kind of built it up in Miami, and he was the focal point. But, like, if he goes to Houston, Houston won 65 without him. Like, he's just jumping on a great team at that point. I don't know how that helps him historically, you know, again, even if he wins a title.
He's the son. Again, LeBron is the son, so it doesn't matter where he goes, he's the guy. And I guess I'm even saying if he went to Houston. Now, I don't necessarily love that fit, because quite frankly...
I don't either. And I don't know why he would go out west, anywhere out west.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe the idea would be to head them off at the pass rather than, you know, having to get all the way through, throughout the field and then have to face them in the finals. I don't know. And, you know, honestly, I can't answer where he would go. The one thing I will say is I don't love the fit with him and Chris Paul and James Harden on the same team. I mean, because, look, regardless of whether they're friends, regardless of whether, you know, they could make it work, I don't love that fit. You have three ball dominant individuals. Now, I understand Houston fans will say, you said the same exact thing last year about making it work between James Harden and Chris Paul. And you know what? Quite frankly, that was a legitimate concern. They worked it out, and yes, they could work it out. But if I'm LeBron And again, we don't know what the landscape's going to look like. We don't know what some of these other teams are going to do in order to position themselves to be ready for LeBron. So I don't think it has to be a Houston. I understand your point on why would he want to go out west. But again, we don't know what it's going to look like. We don't know how the team, how certain teams will be able to set themselves up to make it, to make it look a little bit better. Maybe Houston looks to move Chris Paul, and then, people would then say, well, wait a second, he's friends with Chris Paul. Look, he's friends with Dwayne Wade too, and he had no problem shipping his butt right back to Miami. Okay, if LeBron leaves, I'll preface it with that. If LeBron leaves, he's going to be set up. Just like he did when he was returning to Cleveland, it's going to be on his terms. He's going to dictate it. And again, no matter where he goes, at least right now, he's the son, and all the other folks are trying to get some warmth off of him.
And that's why I don't think Philly's a good fit for him either. I look at Ben Simmons. You're going to stunt his growth, and him and Embiid. You have a post player and a perimeter player that can't shoot and who's also ball dominant. It's not a good fit there. I don't think anybody else in the East is really ready to receive him. And I don't know if these other franchises are ready to bend over backwards for LeBron and acquiesce to his every whim, because that's a big piece of this. Brian Windhorst for ESPN just wrote a piece about the organizational fatigue, quote-unquote. I've been saying this for years about LeBron, that it's difficult to build a team for the future when LeBron lays out this edict that I want to win now or else, and the or else is – affixed to him taking shorter contracts each year to give him the flexibility to leave if he wants. That's all well and good, but what happens is you end up with these old, overpaid, unflexible rosters. We saw it in Cleveland the first time. We saw it the last year in Miami. We're seeing it in Cleveland again. This is LeBron's move. And so that's the only thing about what you said earlier about if he leaves, he's giving you everything and all that, and it's hard for Cleveland fans to be mad. And I get all of that. But the only thing that I would say is more than anybody else, in my opinion, LeBron is the reason, the biggest reason why this Cavs roster is not equipped to help him beat the Warriors or win another championship at this point. This is not a championship Cavs team. And I think he's the biggest reason why, even though he's also the biggest reason why they're in this position to get back to the finals. He's the biggest reason why the roster looks the way it looks. It's not an accident that every time he's about to walk out the door, the team is left with old ball players on heavy contracts. That's not all on management. That's LeBron that's doing that.
That's true. And honestly, those are the circumstances that you sign up for with
absolutely
when you're bringing in LeBron.
And every team in the league would do that, which is why I don't understand all the criticism that Cleveland's front office gets. That's kind of the bone that sticks with me. Like, they're not perfect up in Cleveland. They're by no means have they made every correct move, but you have to bend over backwards for LeBron. It's just what you do.
I'll be honest with you. I think part of that is because Dan Gilbert's not a likable figure. Just being honest. Yeah. And folks in Cleveland could be mad at me, be mad at breakfast. I don't care. He's not a likable figure. He definitely upset certain fan bases and folks in LA. Shout out to them. They definitely know what I'm talking about. So it is what it is. But ultimately, like you said, every other team in the league would do the same thing. They would do the same exact thing and be in a bad position moving forward after he was done with his run there.
Yeah. And I know you got to run, but. And I think you were talking about the Chris Paul trade, right? Where didn't Dan Gilbert step in and say that this is collusion or a monopoly or something like that? He said something like that at one point, did he not?
He did. Also, the fact that quite frankly, that letter to about LeBron after the fact, that was some punk stuff. It was the fact that he left it up there on the website until it was time for him to come back. That was some punk stuff. It is what it is. I don't personally, care for the individual, but if I was a fan of Cleveland, I would say, hey, look, this guy's, yes, he doesn't do everything right, but he's at least willing to, do whatever it takes to get us back to championship level.
And that's right. He spends into the luxury tax every single year. I mean, we're in the quadruple repeater tax, the Cavs are. Because and Dan Gilbert's willing to do that. And the reason he wrote the letter was because he was sticking up for Cleveland. Now, I don't agree that the letter was the right move, but he wrote that letter to stick up for his city, a city that had been stepped on for 100 years by people in and outside of sports. And somebody who's from Northeast Ohio just spat in their face and walked out the door and embarrassed them on national TV. And he was sticking up for his fan base. And I, you know, I don't really blame him for that, even though, like I said, I don't think it was the right way to go about it. But still, though, I don't hate him for that, obviously, because he was sticking up for people from Cleveland like me. So I can appreciate that, man. And I know you got to run, so thank you so much for your time, Jabari. I wish we had more time with you, man. And it's hard to get a hold of this man, y'all. This man is busy. But he took precious time out of his day to come hop on the Hip Hop Sports Report podcast. Jabari, thank you for joining us again.
Justin, you're the man. I appreciate it. I definitely appreciate you working with my schedule. Definitely appreciate it.
No doubt, man. It's always a good time. Thank y'all for tuning in to the Hip Hop Sports Report podcast. Y'all, we out of here. Peace.